Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, is it time for the Republicans to build our own election machine? Also, we talked to the man who discovered the Hunter Biden laptop. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. And get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. Get involved with America Fest. Come to our amazing event December 17, 18, 19, and 20. It's incredible. America Fest, amfest.com. Amfest, amfest.com. America Fest is where all the conservatives across the country come to celebrate liberty, freedom, and America. AMFEST.com. That is AmFest, AMFEST.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. I want to welcome to the program John Paul McIsaac, who discovered the Hunter Biden laptop, was smeared by the media, has gone through a hellish experience, but now CBS News is even admitting, well, it's all true. We've discovered the Hunter Biden laptop is true 2 years later. These total frauds. Play cut 68.
Two of Hunter Biden's former business partners, including Tony Bobulinski, who received the email, told CBS News, the 10 held by H for the big guy is shorthand for 10% held by Hunter for his father. Last month, Senator Chuck Grassley wrote this letter alleging bank records and financial data showed that Hunter Biden and the president's brother profited from a $5 million wire from a company connected to CEFC, the Chinese energy firm. After 2 years of scrutiny, the laptop has not produced evidence President Biden directly benefited from his son's business deals.
So joining us now is John Paul McIsaac. John, welcome to the program.
Sure. Thanks for having me on the show.
So John, tell us the story for those people that haven't heard. How did you come across Hunter Biden's laptop?
Well, on April 12, 2019, Hunter Biden came into my shop with three liquid damaged laptops. I was able to check in one, two I left with him. That one laptop, when I checked it in, performed a data recovery. That's what he came in for. He didn't come in for a repair. He came in for a data recovery. So I was kind of forced to recover the data, manually recover it, verify it. That's when I realized that there was a lot of homemade porn and drug use. But I also saw some other documents that were kind of a concern. They showed a lot of exchange. The exchange of a lot of money, and then ultimately I would discover that that was a lot of money being exchanged for access to the office of the vice president.
Now, there's some speculation that on the laptop there was illegal forms of pornography. Can you speak to that?
You know, I've never felt really comfortable about talking about the actual contents of the laptop with anybody other than people of authority and the authorities. I can say that the 80,000 images of CP that were reported to be on the laptop, that's false. Mm-hmm. There's some disturbing images revolving family members, and I'll just leave it at that.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. So let me ask you, how do you personally feel after having been basically character assassinated for years, and now CBS News is coming out and acting as if they knew this all along?
Well, you know, I knew it was going to be a gamble when CBS approached my lawyer about 3-4 months ago requesting a copy of the laptop. I knew that it was a risk giving them access, but also what they could do, try to twist the story and try to damage my reputation more than they already had. It turns out the gamble paid off. I was impressed with their coverage of it. It's a little day late and dollar short, but I'm glad they decided to join the party. The question is kind of why now? But I'll leave that to other people to speculate.
Well, I'll speculate. I think it's because they want to get rid of Joe Biden. Tell us about the book that you have published or that you've written about this entire saga.
Well, I never thought I'd be an author. I'll tell you that. It really all started when I got defeated by Twitter in a court of law. I tried to sue Twitter for defamation when they labeled my actions hacking, when they decided to block the New York Post story and then block people's accounts and throttle the conversation. Because if I was ever going to fix people's computers again, having the label hacker was just a death sentence in my industry. So I figured the only way I was going to, if I couldn't defend myself and hold those accountable in a court of law, then a book was going to be my only way of holding people accountable in a court of public opinion. And I wrote the book, and I didn't think it was going to get published because people still thought I was a Russian agent or this is all part of a plot from the Kremlin. Eventually, though, Miranda Devine, who wrote The Laptop from Hell, saved my bacon. She was able to put me in front of her publisher, and things got moving, and now I have a book out.
What do you think people are going to learn in this book when they get it? And the book, by the way, is American Injustice, My Battle to Expose the Truth.
Well, I think it should be a cautionary tale. There's two stories, and I think the more important story is not revolving around a guy with a drug problem and a sex addiction that left three laptops at my shop or one laptop at my shop. I think the story is more of this is what happens when our mainstream and social media collude with our federal agencies that have been weaponized politically. And this is the outcome. And they decided to block my story, replace the narrative with this Russian collusion and push that on to the American people. And they took away my opportunity to tell my story. So this book allows me to tell the story. They can't shadow ban this book. They can't, you know, block it on YouTube. So this is my story and my effort to get the truth out.
Yeah. I mean, and you read some of these headlines here. It's extraordinary. I mean, we look at what the media did. Are Trump allies peddling Russian disinformation about the Bidens? What we know and don't know about Hunter Biden and a laptop. Hunter Biden email story has all the hallmarks of a Russian campaign, 50 senior U.S. intel officials say. You were smeared as a Russian agent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's why one reason why I fight so hard now is I don't want my family's name, which has been a military family, decorated. My father's decorated colonel in the Air Force. Half my family's retired or active. So it's kind of, it's the family profession. And the last thing I want is to be, have that family name known as colluding with a foreign power to affect a presidential election.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and it all just kind of landed in your lap and you tried to do the right thing, right? You repeatedly tried to contact Hunter Biden for quite some time to mm-hmm. return the property. Is that right?
Yeah, I sent him an automated bill from Square. I reached out to him multiple times. I knew his phone worked because I called him when the data recovery was complete to have him come in and drop off a hard drive. And he did. So I knew he was getting his voicemail messages. I just don't know why after April 17th, when I sent the bill out, he never came back and picked it up.
Really, it really is shocking. Anything else about the book you want our audience to know or about your story in general? And I also want to thank you for your courage and perseverance throughout this entire drama.
Well, I want to, first off, I just want to let everybody who has supported me either by buying the book or by just a prayer or anything in between, I'm eternally grateful. I would not have been able to make it this far or get the book done if it wasn't for the feeling that I had of half the nation behind me. So thank you.
Well, God bless you. Thank you so much. And please check out the book, everybody. It is American Injustice by John Paul McIsaac, My Battle to Expose the Truth. Everyone go check it out. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go to here. Play Cut 57, GLAAD, which I think is the gay, lesbian, something, something, talks about in terms of gender-affirming care, the AMA and Pediatric Association have conformed that surgeries are safe. They are saying that it's safe to chemically castrate your children and medically mutilate your kids. I really wonder that in some of these battleground districts that didn't go our way, if we would have talked more about this issue. Play Cut 57.
In terms of trans kids and gender-affirming care, the American Medical Association, the Pediatric Association, has confirmed that these are safe procedures. This is finished business. It's politicians and junk science who's creating some kind of debate or argument about this.
You hear that it is safe to chop off your 9-year-old's parts. It's safe to give your child Lupron. It is safe to chemically castrate your children, what the AMA says. An entire multi-billion dollar industry has been created around preying on children, administering drugs they do not need, convincing them to go in for surgery that they're told is going to be a wonderful thing to them. And what is her exact language? She says it is settled science in terms of gender-affirming care. My position on this remains the same. In counseling and in psychology and in medicine, it is not the job of the professional to affirm the sick person. You do not give liposuction to someone who has anorexia. You do not affirm someone's mental illness. You challenge them and heal them into a place where they could be at peace and they can flourish. Look, Christmas, the holidays, when our waists get bigger and our wallets tend to get smaller. It's the season when most companies want you to spend all your money, but Good Ranchers wants to help you save this Christmas season. Beef prices are estimated to increase another 20% early in 2023. Continuing the largest spike on meat in recent U.S. history, Good Ranchers is letting you lock in the price on all your meat this November when you subscribe during their Black Friday savings. With my code CHARLIE, you can get their exclusive Black Friday offer of two free Black Angus New York strip steaks. These are two 12-ounce steakhouse quality cuts. They'll absolutely blow you away in flavor. I love Good Ranchers at goodranchers.com/charlie. You'll inflation-proof your meat budget, get over $70 of free USDA choice steaks, and save an additional $25 on every box when you subscribe. Look, if you guys need to cook for this November or this Christmas season, just go buy a box of meat. It's so easy. You guys, you put it in the freezer, you thaw it when you need it. It's goodranchers.com/charlie, all made in America. Support American ranchers. Treat yourself or someone you love to Good Ranchers award-winning service and quality this holiday season. Remember to visit goodranchers.com/charlie or use my code CHARLIE at checkout to grab their best offer of the year. Black Angus is one of their premier breeds of cattle for high-quality beef, so don't have a normal Black Friday this year. Have yourself a Black Angus Friday with two free steaks from Good Ranchers. American meat delivered. There's a lot to be thankful for this week, including Anthony Fauci no longer being in our government. Now, I haven't seen the last of Anthony Fauci, I got to tell you. We got to get him back in front of Congress. We got to get this leadership fight figured out. We got to get committees filled, and then we got to start sending subpoenas out like frisbees to every single one of these people. Fauci gave his final message today at the White House, play cut 69.
So my message and my final message, maybe the final message I give you from this podium, is that please, for your own safety, for that of your family, get your updated COVID-19 shot as soon as you're eligible to protect yourself, your family, and your community.
This guy never stops. Paid to you by Pfizer, AstraZeneca, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson. Fauci continues. He says the real danger is those of us that have not been vaccinated. Play cut 72.
Been vaccinated and unboosted versus vaccinated plus boosted. That doesn't mean you shouldn't get boosted, but the real danger is in the people who have not been vaccinated. So that's where we expect if we're going to see a problem this winter, it's going to.
Yeah, if you see a problem, it's going to be the unvaccinated people. Dr. Anthony Fauci is the worst of the fourth branch of government. There has to be a mandate for this new Republican House of Representatives to put on full display the lying, the cheating, the stealing, the deceit, the self-enrichment of Anthony Fauci. Anthony Fauci was never elected by anybody. Anthony Fauci was largely unknown to most people and unlimited amounts of power to be able to make money from private actors and still run a government agency, the highest paid employee in the federal government. And we're still being lectured, morally told that if you do not get the experimental gene therapy that they call the vaccine, you are a bad person. That's what Anthony Fauci says. The language sounds awfully similar to what I think Anthony Fauci wants to say. It's just we're not Canada. We're not going to be Canada anytime soon. Dr. Mackis of Canada, listen to how he talks about unvaccinated people. Play cut 17.
That any of their unvaccinated patients, that they should consider that they have a mental problem and that they should be put on psychiatric medication. So far, it's just a suggestion, but the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Ontario should not be making these kinds of suggestions. This is extremely unethical, and this is a very, very slippery slope. If they're suggesting that people who wish to have bodily autonomy and don't want an experimental vaccine, that there may be something mentally wrong with them, that is a very, very dangerous slippery slope that we're on.
Yeah, I guess. So that's not some fringe person saying that. That is the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Ontario sending out a memo that if you do not get vaccinated, you need to get on benzodiazepines, Zoloft, and Xanax immediately. That you have a chemical imbalance, that you need to be medicated. I mean, it's very clear, isn't it? It's that if you have a free-thinking bone in your body, if you have a liberty-loving fiber in your being, we have to medicate you. If you love liberty and you might have some fears about tyranny, or I don't know, fears about the experimental gene therapy, we're going to put you on antidepressants. We're going to put you on psychiatric drugs. You might say, oh, Charlie, that will never happen here. How many times do we have to say that of what happens to our neighbors to the north and it creeps on down to America? How many times, from the trucker resistance to the debanking campaigns to social media suppression to ESG to the environmentalism, all of it starts with Canada. Doesn't start there, but it's incubated there, and then it comes over here. The official board of the Physicians and Surgeons of Ontario saying that if you are unvaccinated, you should be put on psychiatric drugs. The end of the year is right around the corner, and it's time for you to consider a change in your investment plan. This is Charlie Kirk, and I strongly recommend you go right now and see my friends at PAX to review your investments. They are the one firm I know that focuses on biblical, responsible investing and does not force you to invest in companies that literally attack Christian values. If we want religious liberty in our country, we have to stop investing in companies that are trying to suppress our freedoms. I love PAX Financial. They manage some of my money. I trust them. And that's why before the end of the year, you need to text the word Charlie to the number 74868. That's Charlie to 74868, and someone with PAX Financial Group will connect you right away. So take out your phone, text the word Charlie to 74868. I trust them with my money, and I think you should trust them with your money. That is the word Charlie to 74868. They're a great operation. Check them out today. As we continue to reflect back on the midterm elections, it's important that we learn the right lessons and not the wrong lessons, because there is a deliberate campaign by the establishment uniparty to tell us that it's because we nominated two conservative candidates and that we need to go back to the ways of John McCain and Jeff Flake. And that's what they're trying to tell us. Well, here to help us navigate all of it is Chris Buskirk, great American and very smart thinker. Chris, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, Charlie. Good to see you.
Yeah, you too. Sorry I couldn't make your deal last week, but a lot of things happening. So, Chris, let's kind of start on the surface level here. What do you think went right for America First conservatives 2 weeks ago?
I'll tell you what. Here's where I would start with that. It wasn't 2 weeks ago. It was a year ago. But we got some really, really good, smart candidates to run. And that's where all this stuff starts, right? You've got to get good quality candidates out there to run. And I know, as you were kind of saying just a second ago, there's a narrative that is being attempted to be foisted upon us, which is that we ran a bunch of terrible candidates. I mean, there were some that were, you know, C's, there were some that were D's, there were some that were A triple pluses.
Yes,
too.
Like Blake
and you
Masters.
Know what I'm thinking about?
Yes.
Like Blake Masters here in Arizona, like J.D. Vance in Ohio. You know, there were a handful of these folks out there who they're the person that everybody always says they want to run for office. They are smart. They have good educations. They are on the, they have other things they could be doing with their lives. They've been successful in business.
Yes.
They're good family people. They are churchmen themselves. Like, you know, they're people of faith. These are the guys you're saying, like, God, why don't we get, you know, this type of person to run for office? Well, it's because these people, you know, they got other things going on. Well, you know, with people like JD and people like Blake here in Arizona, these are those guys. And it started with recruiting folks like that. To run, there's good and bad with that. The good is that those are the people we want running the country. Those are the people we want in office. The bad is that those people are as much a threat to the incumbent establishment, even on our side politically, as they are to the opposite side. And they know that. Like, they can see these guys come and they're like, wow, they're young, they're hungry, they're smart, they're accomplished, and maybe they're coming for our jobs too. They're not just, and as a result, and you saw it here with Blake in Arizona. Blake got a lot of support from the grassroots. Blake got a lot of support from the America First donor community. Mm-hmm. Blake got absolutely nothing from the establishment. He got left hung out to dry by people like Mitch McConnell and the super PAC that he runs.
Yeah, and that just talks about, I mean, that's just the surface level. By the way, Chris is behind American Greatness, great website. You guys should check it out, amgreatness.org. So Chris, I guess let's go into what went wrong. You were one of the few people that early were warning and cautioning that the era of vote by mail is here and that voting early needs to be strategically embraced.
Yeah.
You know, and that was a controversial take. You know, my own feelings were, okay, maybe in-person election day, but because, you know, for a lot of reasons, game day voting, and obviously that didn't work very well in Arizona. We were ambushed and sabotaged with machine failures, amongst other things. So how should we think about vote by mail? I mean, is it time to embrace it? Because there's a lot of people that have legitimate ballot security concerns. Is there a happy medium there?
Yeah, I guess let me start by saying this. The absolute 100% platonic ideal of elections is everybody votes on one day in person. Like, that's the best scenario. We see it in countries all around the world. I mean, people like to take France as an example because yes. They do it with paper and pencil, and they do it. It's very old school, and they know the results at like 10 or 11 p.m.
Yep.
on election day, which we have been informed is totally impossible. And yet it happens. France isn't the only country. There's countries all over the world that do it exactly this way, and everybody's tucked into bed at 10:30 or 11, and they know who won the election. And yet, for some reason, the country that claims to be the most advanced democracy on the planet says we can't do that. There's just no possible way. Counting, you know, paper, pencil, no, that's archaic. But the countries that do it actually count ballots faster than we do. So anyway, not to belabor the point, but that is actually the ideal, is to do it that way. That is probably not going to happen anytime soon. In this country, because even if there was a sort of a groundswell of support, it would be a state by state. So with that sort of as a backdrop, what I would say is this, is that Republicans need to do one thing, and that is to understand that there is a difference between the rules that around the elections as they are currently written and the rules around elections as we would like them to be written. And we should be able to walk and chew gum while we are working on a better set of rules around elections. And that's everything from voter ID to whether it be day of, you know, how the mail-in ballots are handled, all of those sorts of things. There's real work to be done on that stuff in a bunch of states. Not every state, because you do have states like Ohio, Florida, that actually have reformed their elections.
They're functioning.
They're very good. I mean, look at Florida. Like, Florida is like France. Like, everybody was in bed at 11 and knew who won.
Yeah, DeSantis by 18. Wasn't hard.
Right. It was easy. So, and it's interesting how the states that have performed their election procedures, how Republicans win by big margins there, isn't it? So I would say, though, in a state where that is still a work in progress, you gotta play by the rules as they are written. You don't have to like the rules. Like, what do they say? Don't hate the player, hate the game.
Yep.
And so what that means is embracing early balloting where it presently exists without having to love it. But it does mean you cannot allow the Republican candidates to get behind. And that's what we saw, is that it's not only a matter of going out and collecting ballots where legal, you know, there's legal ballot harvesting in some states. Even in Arizona, there's a version of ballot harvesting that is legal. It's, I mean, people say it as ballot harvesting, but basically, if somebody's a family member in your household, like a husband with a wife, the husband is allowed to take the ballot, yes, the wife's ballot. But whatever the rules are, abide by them, but maximize the amount of ballots that we are getting turned in legally, obviously, but maximize that according to the rules in your state, even while we are working on making a better set of rules.
Yeah, I mean, and I mean, we have some evidence to suggest this, video evidence as well, but I mean, we know the left is breaking the rules. We know they're ballot harvesting in Arizona. It's just some of these dumps are just so uncharacteristic. I refuse to believe that some of this is happening organically. But so then, I guess the question is then, Chris, do we need to then, you know, going now to 2024, do we now need to have a rather robust and aggressive campaign to say that we are going to have in-person early voting? Is it time for us to get back? We used to dominate early voting way back when. I mean, conservative Republicans used to, we used to win elections thanks to early voting. Now we do all game day all the time. And just by simple logic, you're going to have a taper. You're going to broaden the window of bad things to happen, like what happened in Anthem, for example, one of our reddest precincts in Maricopa County, where there were 2.5-3 hour waits. We don't know. I mean, Abe Hamadeh almost guaranteed would have won if that wouldn't have happened. And so how do we communicate that, though? Because a lot of our listeners, understandably, don't want to vote early. They want to vote on game day. But maybe in-person early voting is something that we should embrace?
I think so. I mean, look, I vote on election day. I like doing it. I just think that's the Me right too. Way to do it. If somebody wants to vote early, and God bless them, I like election day. I grew up, you know, watching my parents vote on election day. And so I'm in the habit of doing that. And I'm, you know, like, it's no surprise, like, I'm one of those voters who, like, would crawl across broken glass to get there on election day. But I guess I would say this is that, you talk about conservatives and Republicans dominating early voting, in the distant past. It's not even that distant. In Arizona, we won the early vote in 2018.
Yep.
You know, so it's only 4 years ago that we were dominating this. And that was not because we had an awesome turnout machine. That was because Republicans, you know, Republicans like to vote. Republicans are responsible about voting, et cetera. That's historically sort of been the way it is. I mean, there's a couple of cultural changes that have gone on. One is there has been so much of controversy around election integrity and election security since the 2020 election that a lot of Republicans who even only 4 years ago, they just mailed in their ballots in a place like Arizona. They didn't do it. They held their ballots and they either voted in person or they took their mail-in ballot and they just walked it in on election day. So there was a bunch of that was going on. So there's that cultural shift where we have to sort of reorient our people back to just making sure that they vote. I mean, honestly, we really don't care if people who are on our side, I don't care if they vote on election day, if they do early in person or whatever, but they got to do it. So there's that part because our turnout was down this year. And there's probably a lot of reasons behind that. But the other thing that's sort of at a higher level that we need to be, we need to really recognize and be more intentional about is that the Republican coalition has changed quite a bit over the years. It was a sort of middle, upper middle class coalition. It is now sort of more of a working class, middle class coalition. And the working class, you know, I don't love that term. It sounds sort of Marxist, but you know what I mean.
Muscular class
or whatever.
There you go.
The muscular class. Okay, there we go. Better yet. The muscular class. The muscular class is out moving drywall on election day. The muscular yes. class has other things going on. We need to be people who are sort of in what you might call the operations element of politics need to make sure those people get turned out. Like, we need to have very robust turnout operations because at the margin, it makes a big difference whether we, you know, whether or not we are strongly motivating people to get out and vote. I mean, this is basically old fashioned Democrat union politics, right? The unions turned out the muscular class for the Democrats for generations. Well, a lot of that base has moved over to the Republican Party, but we don't have the apparatus or the infrastructure to do the turnout that the Democrats were doing. And we need to, because at the margin, we lose a meaningful percentage of those people who, for whatever reason, just don't vote.
Long gone are the days. I mean, 2016 was magical, where you just kind of can throw it against the wall and say, okay, everyone, show up. I hope it works. Yeah, we don't do that anymore. We have
well,
to move
here's
on.
A, here's something about here's something about 2016, Charlie, sorry, is that Donald Trump is a one-man turnout machine
yes.
for the muscular class. Nobody else that, does that. I've started to look at some data
about that. You can't replicate it.
Without, you can't replicate it.
You just can't. Are you tired of feeling tired? I have never experienced anything quite like the new Strong Cell product. I take it right before every single show. It's so easy. And you've got to read up on everything that has been packed into these tiny bottles. You see, Strong Cell is a new scientific cocktail of cellular level replenishment. It's so simple. Just drink one small bottle of Strong Cell liquid per day and boom, you guys get NADH. NAD is something I've been studying for a while. And before I got to know Strong Cell, I said, boy, I really would love to take it every day. It's a crucial coenzyme for creating natural energy and restoration in your bodily cells. It also contains collagen, well documented for its vast health benefits. Your body should experience a big energy boost the first week. Then within 15 days, you'll start noticing even more benefits. 30 days, you'll be feeling so much different. So do me a favor and consider giving the supplement the full 4 weeks versus just one bottle to realize the best results for you. The formula is designed to generate long-term positive change, unlike energy drinks. I take it every single day. It's not an artificial boost of immediate energy like caffeine. I'm talking about cellular level restoration. Learn more right now at their website. Visit strongcell.com/Charlie and enter promo code Charlie for a 20% discount. They have made me a believer. NAD is a real thing. You guys should check it out. My special 20% discount for Kirk Show fans will apply whether you want to test it out for 1 week or for a month. But I highly encourage you guys to try it for all 4 weeks. You won't regret it. He actually defies the laws of nature in that capacity. And I think we've now tried to apply it to other cycles and other circumstances. In this midterm election, we just assumed that we were going to see that turnout. Now, turnout was pretty robust, but we didn't see the extra tick up of turnout. And for example, let's just take Arizona, sure. Yavapai, Yuma, Mojave. It was good, but there was anywhere between 220 to 280,000 voters in just four counties that were in Maricopa that didn't vote this cycle, that voted for Trump.
That's right. That's right. I mean that's really the answer to the narrative that is attempted to be pushed on us right now, which is that Trump depresses turnout, or Trump candidates depress turnout, or they turn people off. I mean, we know that Trump is the most hated politician. He's also, in many ways, the most beloved politician in this country. But there is a segment of our voters who only come out and vote for him. Give you an example. There were, and we did this as an organization I'm involved with, did this as a data project in the lead up to the 2022 election. So earlier this year, there were 543,000 odd Republican voters in Arizona who voted in 2016 and 2020, who were eligible to vote in 2014 and 2018, but did not. Okay, so it's a big pool of people who are coming out just to vote in the presidential election. Now, that in a sense, that's normal behavior. Like there are just people who only vote presidential, but it was actually quite a large number, you know, as a percentage compared to other comparable periods in other states. And the point is that Trump, there are people Trump turns out, and only he turns out. And so when you go back and you start to look at some of these states, Arizona's one, Michigan's another, Wisconsin's another, and you look at what turnout was like in 2016, 18, 20, and 22, you find out that actually the margin in these states is Trump because of the people that he brings out. And so for the people, you know, in other words, there's a counter argument here. Yes, there are people who are just turned off by Donald Trump. There's a lot of people who are turned on almost exclusively by him. And one of the challenges for Republicans in general is, how do you keep those people engaged? How do you keep them motivated when Donald Trump isn't at the top of the ticket, whether that be because it's a midterm, or whether that be because, you know, maybe we're 4 years or 8 years down the road. And these are people that are a key part of our coalition. We want them to be involved. We need them to be involved if we're going to win. And the question is, how do you keep them involved when the guy that has gotten them involved in politics, in many cases for the first time, isn't on the ballot?
Yeah. So Democrats were able to replicate Tempe and downtown Phoenix presidential style turnout. Republicans were not able to replicate Yavapai, right. Mojave, and Cochise. That's amazing. I didn't think that would have been the case. And again, a lot of it's speculation, right? Because how are you going to get these people if Trump's not on the ballot? But for Kari Lake or Abe Hamadeh, to a lesser extent Blake, if 50,000 more hard R's would have showed up in the rules of Arizona, it's over. With all the other nonsense that happened, right? I mean, like, all of it, right? Pima being Pima and finding, like, weird ballots from the Mexican drug cartel, like, crazy stuff, right? And machines going down in Maricopa. And so this is a question in front of us that's kind of being thrust there. Let me just kind of finish with this, Chris. We're no longer in, like, we have some time off. There is no time off. We have to build the infrastructure. Are you given any confidence that the Republican establishment is going to build this anytime soon?
Not really. I've given this talk a bunch of times in public, and I'll just repeat it in a very brief form right now for your audience, Charlie. There are things, there are legitimate criticisms of the Republican establishment, the existing Republican infrastructure. I'm very sympathetic to them. But as I've gotten more deeply involved in some of the grassroots type of stuff, when you're doing, voter registration, get out the vote and these sorts of things, one of the things that I learned, honestly, I mean, it was just a legitimate learning experience, is that there are things that we expect some of the existing institutions to do that they're not capable of doing. And that means that we need new institutions to do those things, because they are very much needful. I'll give you an example. The RNC comes in for a lot of criticism. There's some that's legitimate, there's some that isn't legitimate. But one thing people don't appreciate is that campaign finance limits the amount of money that the RNC can raise. And the things that we expect them to do, the amount of money it costs is far in excess of what they can raise. And that means that we need other allied organizations to go out and do those things.
We'll dive into that deeper at another time. Chris, thank you so much. Appreciate it. American greatness. Check it out. Thank you.
Thanks, Charlie.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.